Thank you very much. I'm going to shift gears a little bit to look at organics, just as the inorganics that have been primary focus of the last two talks, the metal species. It's largely about the speciation, which defines their availability, the chemical speciation. In the hydrophobic organics, it's a lot more about the partitioning between sorbene phases. These are refractory organics. They're not a great deal of speciation is not the issue. It's really the partitioning between phases. I'm going to focus a lot on something, a theme that Anna had just discussed, which was the pore water as an indicator of certainly what is available, what moves through a cap, for example, but potentially also as an indication of availability. I do think there's a role for pore water measurements, and we're doing a lot of work with DGTs and some of that in cooperation with Anna with looking at pore water concentrations for inorganics. But the approach is certainly a lot clearer. I think it has a stronger fundamental basis when we're looking at organics, and that's going to be the focus of what I'm going to be talking about. And so what I'm going to be looking at is passive sorbents, passive sampling, to assess availability of contaminants and sediments. And just as we're looking at with the inorganic, the metal species in the, for example, Richard, in your first talk, just as you're looking at those inorganics, the bulk solid concentration certainly doesn't tell the entire story. It isn't a very useful indicator at times, but all of our regulatory standards are written on it, and it's perhaps unfortunate. Certainly, I would hope to add to the body of the discussion so far that it's not about it's not what's in the solid, stupid, or hopefully not without the stupid at the end. But in any event, that is a recurring theme here. It is easy to measure, but is this really what we need to use to evaluate risk? And certainly for the hydrophobic organics, it's the interstitial water concentration, which I think can be a much better indicator of availability. Now, we did some work early on laboriously trying to measure pore water concentrations and compare that to the relatively easy measurement of solid concentration and look at organic uptake, in this case, PCB bioaccumulation in tubophysids. And did we say we had a pointer? We're looking at PCB bioaccumulation in tubophysid organisms that are deposit feeders. They're ingesting sediment and accumulating contaminants. So on the y-axis here, we have a normalized bioaccumulation in the organisms exposed to the sediment compared to bulk sediment concentration. In this case, in both cases, I've normalized relative to the organic matter, both in the organism and in the sediment. What we should have, if we believe the standard paradigm that the sediment concentration matters, and in particular what the amount, even if we normalize by organic carbon, we should see a relationship like this. In reality, we see no relationship. If there is a trend line, draw it on there simply because I enjoy the fact that it goes down slope. What it tells us, if we really want to decrease the organism accumulation of these organics in this case, we really need to contaminate that sediment more. So I love to put that trend line on there, but I don't believe it any more than you do. But if we take that same sediment and we look at pore water concentration, we get a much better relationship that we can relate what the accumulation. In this case, I've normalized again organic matter and sediment concentration by using the BASF. But the key here is that it's pore water concentration on the x-axis, effectively, the interstitial water concentration versus a normalized accumulation on the y-axis. And so there is a relationship when we look at the interstitial water, not the bulk solid. Now, measuring that pore water concentration in this case was extremely difficult because of the inability or the volume of water that we need to measure that interstitial water concentration. So putting a lot of effort, and more recently, passive samplers have come into play that have allowed us to measure interstitial water concentrations with much greater resolution, much greater accuracy, and much less or much lower detection limits without trying to generate a liter of pore water to measure concentrations, which are really difficult. There are three main passive samplers that are used. Polydimethyl siloxane, the PDMS, polyethylene, and polyoxymethylene. There really isn't a significant difference between them. There are some small differences. The PDMS is less sorbing than the polyethylene and polyoxyethylene. It has, as a result, probably a little lower detection limits for a given volume of the passive sampler, but that actually helps in terms of kinetics of uptake that we'll mention in a minute. But there really isn't a lot of difference between them. The primary difference is associated with what is readily and easily commercially available in terms of geometries. And the PDMS you can coat on just about anything, and in general it's available, you can have it coated in almost any size and any thickness you want on a thin cylindrical fiber. 1 millimeter glass core, 200 micron glass core. And as a result, I find it very convenient for placing in situ in sediments, a nice cylindrical glass capillary that you can insert into sediments. Polyethylene is thin rectangular sheets, and I just have a harder time shoving that into sediments. And the polyoxymethylene is a think of a tongue depressor sort of shape. And that can work quite well. But one of the issues there is that in at least its commercially available form, the minimum thickness is about 55 microns, and its strong sorbing capacity means that kinetics of uptake are extremely slow. And that's a real problem when we're looking at hydrophobics like the PCBs. So what we employ is we use a variety of sizes of PDMS on thin glass fibers, everything from 100 micron glass fiber up to a millimeter, which is a lot sturdier, and we use that an awful lot. What do we do with that? We insert that into sediments, and we're looking at things such as concentrations in the biologically active zone, perhaps profiles, and as I'll mention in a minute if I have time, or at the end when I have time, looking at profiles in sediment caps to look at performance of those caps. In terms of kinetics, it works extremely well, and it's very easy and a trivial approach to analyze pore water concentrations when we're looking at many of the PAH-type compounds. KOW is between 4 and 6 on a log scale. When you're looking at PCBs, it gets a little bit more involved, but with the way that we set up and developed an approach to dealing with these is to insert these into sediments, allow them to equilibrate, remove them, section the fibers into any degree of vertical resolution that we want, and that could be, we could get sub-nanogram per liter concentration measurements in centimeter vertical resolutions. So there really isn't any other approach out there that can give you that sort of vertical resolution if you need it. And inserted those sectioned fibers directly into a auto-sampling vial with 100 microliters of solvent, this auto-sampling vial with an insert. Trivial analysis, no cleanup, place that directly into an analyzer. HPLC is what we often use for our PAHs. So it's an easy technique to employ. But again, there are some interpretation issues if we are looking at more hydrophobic and might need to leave them in place a little longer, but for the PAHs, it is quite easy to employ because their kinetics of uptake are fast. Let me mention, this first of all shows the approach that we use. If you've ever used a Henry's sampler to measure pore water concentration, we take one of those and modify it. That's what's in the upper left there. But essentially, we just have a shielded rod so that we can protect the glass fiber if we're inserting into sediments, especially into a rock and cobble or sandy system. In a very soft sediment in the lab, we can insert them unprotected. But in the field, we try to protect them, and we modify a Henry sampler, or we have just a simple probe with a slit running through the center of it. And as you can see, the probes themselves are quite small, or the actual fiber. A little bit more about the kinetics of uptake. Turns out that all of these, and even the PDMS, which has relatively rapid uptakes, the uptake is largely controlled by the external mass transfer. It's not the kinetics of uptake in the fiber itself, which unfortunately makes it a little bit more challenging. If it was controlled by the fiber, then we could have a standard understanding of the kinetics of uptake of the fiber. But since it's controlled by outside influences, it's a little bit more difficult. Some people have tried to use performance reference compounds where they pre-equilibrate these fibers or the polyethylene or the POM with a compound and look at the diffusion out as a reference to indicate how fast the uptake kinetics are. Again, by using the PDMS, we actually have a little faster kinetics, or quite a bit faster kinetics than the other two approaches. And we also find it quite easy, because we can have it in much different sizes, is to simply use fibers of two different sizes, which have different kinetics of uptake, and between that we can calibrate a model in any given experiment. Just to illustrate how that's done, this is something that we've employed in Hunter's Point, where on the left-hand side is the raw data of measured concentration in a thin fiber on the x-axis, and on the y-axis the thick fiber. And after we use that information and correct for the kinetics, we find perfect agreement between them. Surprisingly good in this case. I don't expect that would be the case in every case. But again, we can use that to evaluate kinetics. Now, real quickly, just what can we see when we do that? Again, looking at sediment concentrations versus tissue concentrations in some experiments that we sequentially diluted in cooperation with the Erdick lab. No real correlation. Same with Anacostia River sediments. But then we take that same data from the both data sets and do a comparison uptake on the basis of pore water concentrations, the x-axis with the octanol water partition coefficient as basically the lipid water partition coefficient, and we get a much better relationship between what can accumulate in the organisms. Some field data nearby in San Diego Harbor, again, no real relationship. In this case, there are four different sites that we're looking at, and we can't differentiate between these sites with the exception of a reference site, which is very low concentration, but the three contaminated sites we can't differentiate between because it's all scattered in terms of accumulation we see in organisms. But if we try to measure pore water by centrifugation, it improves a little bit, but it's still not very good. But if we use the PDMS, again, we get a pretty good relationship between what we'd expect to see accumulating in organisms, what we measure accumulating in organisms versus what's in the pore water. So I believe that the interstitial water is a much better indicator of what is available. I think it's important to recognize that I'm not implying the pore water is the route of exposure. For these organisms that we've looked at, and there were kind of a mix of three or four different organisms, marine, freshwater, deposit feeders, as well as some amphipods that burrow into sediments, but not but some other organisms that are burrowing, but not necessarily that intensive a deposit feeder. In any event, in all of those cases, the pore water was a good indicator, a good correlator, that in fact the octanol water partition coefficient was a good indicator of the lipid water partition coefficient. And especially with the deposit feeders, the route of exposure was ingestion. But the uptake was still indicated, at least at steady state, by what was in the pore water. So the route of exposure is not the same as what we're not trying to suggest that the pore water is the route of exposure. We're suggesting the pore water is an indicator of when we achieve a quasi-steady conditions in equilibration in terms of the organism, the pore water, and the solid. And that's a reflection of the fairly quasi-steady conditions that we have in sediments. And the PDMS, I think, have been a useful tool to try to indicate that, and we can get the resolution and accuracy and detection limits that we really couldn't by more involved methods. Thank you very much for your attention.